What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. All right, it turns out that the Biden bump after the State of the Union speech was a little bit smaller than anticipated. And by smaller, I mean negative. did not quite work out how they were hoping it would. This is from, from yahoonews.com, yahoo.com. Pundits may have fawned over President Biden's State of the Union address on Thursday, praising it as a home run and the best speech ever. They called it a fiery, powerful, vigorous speech that should erase or at least ease the nagging fears about his age and vitality. But voters barely noticed. A new Yahoo News / YouGov survey of 1,482 U.S. adults. Now, again, these are not likely voters here. These are just U.S. adults. So it's just a popularity contest, right? It's just a poll, just among everybody. Like, hey, what'd you think, right? It was conducted in the days immediately after the State of the Union speech, and it shows zero improvement in perceptions of the president or his standing against former President Donald Trump. Now, actually, that's not, I mean, it's within the margin of error. It's like 1 point down, 1 point. It's like give or take 1 point. So it's basically no change. Okay. So the bump is just a flat line. Before the State of the Union speech, Trump and Biden were statistically tied in a head-to-head matchup, according to the previous Yahoo News YouGov poll from late January. That was a 45-44 poll. But again, these are just adults. These are not likely voters, okay? So he's got to keep that in mind. Again, I'm just bringing this to you because it's a trend line, and it might indicate something larger, right? They remain tied today, Trump picking up 1 point, Biden remaining at 44%, a gap that's still within the poll's margin of error, which is 2.8%. Before the speech, 40% of Americans approved of the job that Biden was doing as president, 56% disapproved. Today, those numbers are, instead of 40% approval, it's down 1 point to 39%. And his disapproval number is also down 1 point. Now, keep in mind, those numbers I just gave you did not come from a poll of people who actually watched the speech. Right? So that's just people's sentiment. So it kind of makes sense that there would not be a change, right? Because they didn't watch it. Maybe they just saw some headlines, they saw some TikTok videos or whatever. Biden, who would be 86 years old at the end of his second term, delivered the State of the Union speech, and all of the media and Democrats, but I repeat myself, were like, yeah, such an energetic display. However, when you start looking at the people who watched it, it appears to have had no effect. What did I say the day after the speech? What did I say? I said, if you're a Democrat or media, but I repeat myself, then you thought he did a fantastic job. And if you are a Republican or you're not a fan of Joe Biden's, this did not allay any of your concerns. And I don't know if anybody who had doubts about Joe Biden, like legitimate doubts, they were not sure. Like they're not partisan, right? They don't follow politics, but they figure, you know what? I need to watch the State of the Union because, you know, it's an election year, whatever. So you watch a little bit of it and you're like, this is kind of weird. Like, who are those people and were they persuaded? And I said, after watching that speech, that speech was not delivered to me. That speech was not for me. That speech was not for Trump supporters. That speech was not for anybody except Democrats and his base. And I said that it's because he has not shored up his left-wing base yet. He is trying to get everybody back in line so he can go into the general not having to worry about his left flank. not having to worry about college kids and Hamas supporters not turning out to vote for him, right? And the anti-Semite, sorry, the anti-Semite demographic as well inside the Democrat Party. Only 30% of Americans say that Biden has been, quote, mostly in charge as president, while 53% say he's been mostly passive. Now, this stat to me, out of this polling, like I'm not really sure what to make of it, because there are a lot of people on the left that want him to do more. So when they say he's been mostly passive and he's not really in charge, like they could think that that's because the Jews are running it all, right? Or we want him to pack the Supreme Court. Why isn't he doing it? That kind of stuff. You also have a bunch of people on the right that are saying he's a puppet, right? Obama's really pulling the strings. Ron McLean's pulling the strings. So they would say he's not mostly in charge. He's mostly passive, right? So I don't really know what to make of that. They highlighted that stat, but I got questions about it. So they asked, though, in this piece at Yahoo News, what's holding Biden back? It may be that the public has made up its mind about his age, or that he'll need more than a single speech to shake things up. Right. Well, there's another possibility that Biden could do to kind of right the ship here and address the concerns of his mental acuity, because as I keep saying, it's not his age that's the issue. I know the media keeps saying it's his age. Maybe some of them are saying it as like a shorthand that, you know, oh, he's just, you know, senile. It's not his age, because if he's sharp as a tack at 86, nobody's going to care, right? But if he's not, then people do. But there is a third option here, which is for him to reverse his aging process, right? So like go full cocoon, you know, go that way. Look, I'm just throwing out ideas here. I mean, the campaign probably needs some ideas. So that's one of the ideas. Get yourself a Wilford Brimley without the diabetes and start kicking cans around, you know? Anyway, either way, the State of the Union address was not the reset that the White House was hoping it would be. Have you called Hillary Clinton? Oh, no, the Russian guy that she gave that reset button to. Maybe get that back. See if you can get that reset button back. Or maybe she's got another one. She probably does, actually. Remember, because she wrote something in Russian that didn't say reset. It said something else. It said like surrender or something. And the Russian guy mocked her. And she was like, oh, well, we'll have to fix that. So they may have an extra one laying around with the wrong wording on it. You can borrow that one. Anyway, just 17% of Americans who watched the State of the Union or followed news about it say Biden seemed, quote, not as old as they expected. 17% that watched it say, oh, he didn't seem as old as I expected him to be. 51% said, yeah, that's about the same. 51. And another 24% said, wow, he seems way older than I expected. So let's combine those last two numbers, 51% and 24%. You are now at 75% of the voters say he is as old as I expected or older. That is no bueno. Again, think about the idea of the reversal of the aging process. Think about it. Asked whether the speech made Biden seem more fit to be president or less fit, 32% said more fit. 35% said less fit. And 28% said that the State of the Union speech did not alter their opinion of Biden's fitness. The most shocking finding, you ready for it? Most of the positive reviews of Biden's speech came from Democrats. I know. I should have told you to sit down first. My apologies. Well, you wouldn't hear it because you probably fainted. Sorry. My apologies. Have you heard about this book called, what is it, about white rural rage? Have you heard this thing? A new book on white rural rage argues that rural Americans are the most racist. Stop me if you've heard this before, by the way. They're the most racist, xenophobic, conspiracist, anti-democratic, and violent geodemographic subgroup of Americans out there. The authors, Tom Schaller and Paul Waldman say their book is driven by data and science, and that even if you don't like their conclusions, the evidence is clear. By the way, in case you were wondering why I sing those two, it's not really a song, it's more of a chant, you know? As all religious chants kind of sound like, you know, that's the whole point. It's I mean, this is what I learned during the year of our COVID, with the branch COVIDians took over all of the spaces and such. And as long as you appeal to the higher authority with the incantation of science and data, then it is true, right? That's what makes it true. You make an assertion, someone says, hey, wait a minute, how do you know that? And the response is science and data. And you just keep saying that, and the more people join in, it becomes like this kind of like harmonious thing. Everybody's like vibing on it, grooving on it, you know? And then you just forget what you were even asking about. Okay, so Schaller and Waldman misuse data, though, to support their claim, according to Nicholas Jacobs. Nicholas Jacobs is an assistant professor of government at Colby College, big fan of their cheese, and the co-author with Daniel Shea of a book called The Rural Voter, The Politics of Place and the Disuniting of America. This was published, by the way, at a website called The Daily Yonder, which... Their slogan is keeping it rural. So, the Daily Yonder. But these guys are legit. They've written a book. They've spent years focusing on rural voters, the rural way of life, rural society, and that sort of thing. And so they've now taken a look at this new book that's making all the rounds on the lefty circuit. And you know, and look, it's being used to denigrate people who vote for Trump. That's the point, right? That's the point. And so you've probably heard about this book. I think it is called White Rural Rage. I think that is what it's called. But whatever. That's the way it's framed. And the point is to denigrate all Trump supporters and to kind of label them all the same way based on science and data, right? Unfortunately for them, if you do a dive into the data, you realize that it actually doesn't support their conclusions. So we'll take a look.
All right. Well, just as I predicted, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in North Carolina. The wait is over. Now you can legally bet on all of your favorite sports anytime, anywhere in the state with DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR. DraftKings has tons of the best features like parlays for multiple games, player props that focus on individual players and their performance within a specific game, social betting groups where you can share your bets with your friends in real time, and just in time for college basketball conference tournaments now underway. And as always, fast and easy payouts, and I have a special promo for you. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use the code word Pete, and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, promo code Pete. The crown is yours, but this is a limited time offer. Gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Oh, and deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms are at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. And NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license.
Email is Pete@thepetecallinershow.com. Got a message here from Jan. As a white man raised in a very rural area of the country, I thought this was an anti-Yankee book. The only rage I have seen in rural white America, at least here in the South, deals with the folks that talk funny. Those are Bostonians. Okay. I'm going over this piece here at the Daily Yonder by Nicholas Jacobs, who wrote a book called, along with Daniel Shea, wrote The Rural Voter, The Politics of Place and the Disuniting of America. And they are just dismantling this new book that's hit the shelves. And you've probably seen these authors making, well, you probably haven't, because they're all, you know, on MSNBC and all of the other legacy outlets. They're making the rounds talking about how racist and xenophobic and anti-democratic and violent rural white Americans are. He says, I've reviewed every publicly available survey and poll used in this book. They use to stereotype, marginalize, and ultimately demean the lives and beliefs of rural Americans. The book reeks of telltale signs of being written first and finding facts second. Only after they settled on a salacious title did they go out and try to find what they already agreed to see, it seems, with little to no attention paid to whether any of it was even true. Although they are sure to sell some books, their selective use of sketchy data is going to worsen our efforts to rebuild rural communities and close a rural-urban divide that threatens our democracy, regardless of where you live. This is not normal academic quibbling over numbers and definitions. The faults that the author here describes led the authors to drastically different conclusions that more rigorously conducted research demonstrates. Where rural politics scholars are increasingly attentive to the idea that, quote, rage is not the same as economic anxiety. They are not the same things. Rage is not economic anxiety. Rage is not community pride. Rage is not having a sense of place. These two guys that wrote this white rural rage book simply want us to write off rural America as the land of radical extremism. The first problem, and there are a bunch of problems with this book, but the first problem is that the vast majority of the data lacks any consistent definition of what they even mean by the word rural, which just seems to be, that seems to me to be a bit of a problem, right? It's like in the title of your book, and you don't even define it consistently across all of the data. This then, of course, gives the authors all of the license they need to pick and choose various points from whatever surveys that they want in order to advance whatever premise they wish to advance. First, he takes a couple of examples here, but the first example is this polling from Ipsos, I-P-S-O-S. It defines rural as anybody living in a county that's not part of what's called an MSA, a metropolitan statistical area. Okay, we are in the Charlotte MSA. I don't even know. So it's now, what, Charlotte? Because they kicked one out. We're now, is it Charlotte, York County, Cabarrus? Or is it Charlotte, Gaston? Because it used to be Charlotte, Gaston, York. Do you remember that? Yeah. But they moved one of the counties. Anyway, these are MSAs, okay? The census, though, they estimate that 54% of all rural people live inside these MSAs. So which is it? Because an MSA has a dense urban center of 50,000 people or more. So they're saying, oh, well, this is this Ipsos data says any resident living in a county that's not a part of an MSA, but half of rural residents live in an MSA. So what are you even talking about? Second, sample sizes are too small. The sample sizes in their data sets are too small. And so what happens is when you start trying to extrapolate out, like, okay, well, I surveyed 10 people and one person said X. So now if I want to extrapolate out to what 100,000 people would say, that one person saying X now turns into 10,000 people saying X, when in fact, you might have just gotten the one guy out of a million that said X, you know? And so any kind of uncertainty and error creates a larger problem in the larger extrapolated data, the larger the margin of error. So small sample size, big problem. Third, because most surveys are done to get a representative picture of the national population, even when they do have the adequate sample sizes, seldom do the rural respondents in the poll actually represent the demographics of rural America. Head down east in North Carolina. You have majority-minority districts down there, counties, rural. In the last 7 years, the author of this piece says, I've surveyed over 25,000 rural residents. And my experience is that the first to respond and fill that rural quota are older and more conservative than average, right? So when you are putting a survey out into the field, the people that first respond to it are older conservatives. Getting young rural folks to respond to surveys is difficult. Most surveys might only actually have a handful of young people answering. And so the vast majority of studies that these two guys who wrote the White Rage book cite, they do not report out demographic statistics on their rural population. So you don't know who they're even talking to. And again, in a small sample size, you get one young person and their one expression of a particular attitude. And now that's going to be ascribed to tens of thousands of other people at the same age. Only two surveys in the entire book conform to basic standards of survey research and even attempt to try and present an accurate picture of rural America. The first is a 2017 study from the Washington Post and Kaiser Family Foundation. The second is a 2018 report from Pew. A study, by the way, that shows that majorities of rural Americans believe that, quote, white people benefit from advantages in society that black people do not have, which doesn't really sound like a white supremacist view. Also, there are still significant obstacles that make it harder for women to get ahead than men, which doesn't sound like a sexist view. That there are indeed, quote, situations in which abortion should be allowed. Oh, and they reject the idea that a non-white majority country would be bad for America. That's one of the surveys cited to call rural voters racist, sexist, and conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
But not even these are perfect.
All right. Do the current world events have you wondering whether we are teetering on the edge of catastrophe? Are you concerned it's going to reach our shores? Okay. So what are you doing about your concerns? Let me help. Carolina Readiness Supply. At CarolinaReadiness.com, whether you're looking to expand your emergency preparedness supplies or you have no idea where to even begin, Carolina Readiness Supply can help you. Food, water purifiers, tools, first aid kits, instructional materials, camping and hiking supplies even, because being prepared is just smart. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies and educational materials that you'll need for any kind of emergency. In Waynesville and always at CarolinaReadiness.com, veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
Okay, speaking of liars, these guys wrote a book about white rural rage. And luckily enough, a fellow by the name of Nicholas Jacobs did a deep dive into their book, and he researched all of their footnotes, read through it all, and basically dismantled their entire book. It's just garbage. And this is a guy who is actually an expert in the field. He says, once you account for the margin of error, which these two authors never report once in the book, the margin of error, but once you account for it, rural residents actually believe the same thing as suburban residents do. Indeed, one question down, the survey shows that rural residents are just as likely as urban residents to say that the most, quote, most immigrants coming to America in the last 10 years are doing enough to adapt to the American way of life. Urban people, rural people think the same thing on that question. Rural people, suburban people think the same thing on most questions. The final problem is the worst one, because it exists even if you account for problems of defining what is rural, what is not, and even if you get large representative samples, which these authors did not do that either. But even if you had addressed all that, nowhere in the book is there any attempt to understand why. What motivates rural people? In particular, what motivates them to think one thing or another? 24% of residents are QAnon. That's disproportionately higher than the 17% of Americans who are rural, right? So 70% of Americans live in rural areas. 24% of rural residents are QAnon believers. So obviously, like, they're way more QAnon-y, you know? Wasn't that the guy who played the saxophone? No, never mind. They conclude that rural is extremist then. Rural is a hotbed of QAnon. rural is danger land. But the vast majority of rural residents don't believe in QAnon conspiracies, right? And there are over three times as many QAnon believers in urban and suburban America. By numbers, there's more of them. That makes rural America the threat to American democracy? Really? There are fewer of them. Consider the same fallacy as it relates to something like vaccines. Black Americans are the least likely to have the COVID vaccine. Whatever the reason for this phenomenon, no one would jump from that finding to say that the real threat to public health comes from Black Americans' refusal to take the vaccine, right? We know that claim is nonsense because unvaccinated Black Americans represent such a small percent of the unvaccinated population, just like rural people do. Also, low vaccine rates might actually have little to do with race per se, but instead be the consequence of other factors. Factors that we know are associated with vaccine uptake and race. I don't know, things like maybe income, maybe education, maybe fear of government, right? Instead, the way we would really test why groups believe something, be it conspiracies or vaccines, is to compare individuals within and between the groups so that we can account for the differences that they may have in common. But the authors of this White Rage, Rural Rage book, they never dig into that, right? He says, I got some of their data, so I did the work. I tested their claims that rural residents are xenophobic. And then he, at a group level, 57% of rural residents compared to 35% of urbanites agree that a growing number of newcomers from other countries threaten traditional American customs. Now, you may disagree with that thought, but your disagreement is not with rural people. It's with Republicans. Because that's what Republicans think, right? Rural residents are statistically no more likely to think xenophobic beliefs on account of their rurality. It's their politics. And that's the point here of the book, obviously, right? That's the point. The idea is to say that it's the GOP. So you are these things if you are rural, which is a heuristic. It's just it's a surrogate word. The white rural rage, the goal of the book, is to say that the threat to American democracy is emanating from the heartland. If that's the point, though, the data does not support that idea.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.